Welcome to Dracena Wines Podcast. Our wines plus your moments equals great memories. I'm your host, Lori, and this is a podcast about all things wine. Welcome to episode 96 of Dracena Wines Podcast. Today, I have another masterclass for you. I attended Vin Expo in New York City in early March and registered for the Garnacha Unveiled From Carniña to the World, hosted by Master of Wine Pedro Ballesteros. It was an interesting class in that instead of focusing on a single region, it truly focused on the grape itself, where and how it grows, the soils it likes, and provided us with the opportunity to taste different Garnachas from around the world. Sadly, the audio is not the best. It was recorded in a room that was only sectioned off from the expo with curtains. I did my best to help it along, but I am by no means a master mixer. I'm not even sure that's the right terminology, but I hope you still stick with it because Pedro was full of intriguing Garnacha information. While you are listening, if you could please scroll or swipe or whatever you need to do to get to the rate and review section to leave us a review and help others to find us. If you would like more information on Garnacha, please visit at Vinos Carreña on social media, and their website is wineregion2watch.com. Sláinte!
Spain, founded in 1932, and the only denomination named after a grape variety, so it makes it especially easy to remember. We have been doing a campaign in the U.S. for about 5 years now, and last year we really wanted to do something to elevate Garnacha on a global level. And we celebrated the first Global Garnacha Summit in the Culinary Institute of America, Copia, out in Napa, and we had a wonderful day-long celebration of Garnacha. And Pedro was one of our panelists there, and we had people from Europe, we had people from Australia, we had a really good discussion about this great traveler grape that was literally born in the Aragon region of Spain, Carniña, its birthplace. And we wanted to continue that energy that we had last year through this year. So we're so thrilled to have Pedro Ballesteros, Master of Wine, back to help recreate some of that wonderful energy about Garnacha today with you all. We have a wonderful lineup of wines. And I know a lot of speakers out there who know a lot about Garnacha, who could throw a lot of good data at you and could tell you about what you're gonna, what you should be smelling and what you should be tasting. But I really don't know many people in the world who know how to give wine its context, its history, to weave a rich tapestry for you all today. And I think Pedro is one of the only people who could really do this justice. So we're so happy and thrilled to have him here today.
Thank you for being here. Well, normally when I conduct a tasting, I have always a lot of trust in the tasting capacity. So I'm not going to tell you how the wines taste or whatever. You will find this out. But I would like to tell you about the context, the wines are like this, and a little bit the history and the particularities of Grenache. And the first thing to tell you is that Grenache is a great variety. Is a living being, and Grenache has a character. Dogs, or dogs are the same species, and then there are different races, and each race, dog race, they have a different character. Spaniel are very, very loyal, the Chihuahua are really hard to deal with, Doberman are serious like this, and great varieties, they also have a character on their own. Because they are not animals, it doesn't mean that they don't have a life and a genetic footprint on and a genetic footprint on them. There are great varieties like Cabernet Sauvignon that they would say that they are quite Egocent. Cabernet Sauvignon, whatever it's planted, is having its own character. You know it's Cabernet Sauvignon. It doesn't matter if it comes from Napa, from Bordeaux, from Australia. It has a character of its own. The genetic character is very often even more important than the place. There are other varieties, Nebbiolo, for instance, that are very shy, very particular, very difficult. Nebbiolo is wonderful, excellent, complex, unique in Piemonte. But there is not any other place on earth in which Nebbiolo is delivering top quality. Now in Mexico they are trying hard, but I don't think it's the same Nebbiolo. But Nebbiolo is not a variety that loves traveling all over the world. And Garnacha is humble and generous. Garnacha is a chameleon variety. Garnacha will subdue its own genetic character for explaining to you where it comes from, who is making the Garnacha wine. This is a characteristic. Because of that, Garnacha has been traveling a lot all over the world with a number of conditions. Garnacha is generous, it's humble, it's chameleonic, only upon certain conditions. Garnacha has many problems growing at high latitudes. Garnacha does not like at all water, it's a bit important in this, because she likes to be with very little water, and she's very starved. When it is growing like this, it can grow very well in places when there is very dry places, when there is a lot of drought. Garnacha needs a long season, and then Garnacha can stand very cold moments if the vines are very old. Okay? But you will not find Garnacha in the Alexander Valley, you will not find Garnacha in Morocco, in very good places. Garnacha there would never grow. But in all of the places, and you wouldn't find good Garnacha in very rich soils. Garnacha is associated with stubbornness, with toughness. Garnacha is associated with very poor soils and very little water. There, Garnacha would give its character to the terroir it represents. This is, and because of that, it's traveling all over the place. Garnacha, apparently, this is not me, Jose Guillermo and Garcia Robinson, who said this, and many other scientists. Garnacha was born in Aragon. Was born in Aragon, nobody knows when. Most probably, there were a number of basic grape varieties that were brought by the Greeks and then the Romans, etc. And those grape varieties, they had crosses with the wild grape varieties in Spain. And it was at the origin of Garnacha and other varieties. It's not so important where it was born and when it was born. It became important at the moment that in Spain in the year 711, the Arabs entered into Spain. They conquered the whole of Spain. And then it took 800 years, little by little, to invent Spain by winning battles to the Arabs. And by winning those battles to the Arabs, the people started to drink. Because you know that Muslim people, they don't drink. So we were having our vineyards there. And this is the moment that Aragon at least is documented as the cradle of Garnacha. From that moment on, the thing that happened all over Europe, which was similar to America, but many years before, you were occupying land and you needed columns. And those columns, they have the obligation to bring with them their workforce and the banks. In the US it's not the same. Not here in New York because of the Filoxera product, but in California it was the same. And this was the moment in which Garnacha was traveling. Why Garnacha was traveling so well? Because it is stable. It is easy to buy. You can, in very difficult conditions, you can produce wine. And then, little by little, the quality characteristics were being developed. But now we have a Grenache that was born. I'm going to go down here because I prefer to explain to you things. Garnacha was born in the city. Where is Carinena, Calatayud, Carabobol, Carabobol. Then from that moment, take into account the Arabs, come here, they occupy up to 40 years. And little by little, in more than 300 years, little by little, the Christians are going down, down up to here. Then there was a big battle, and then all of this was down Christian, and in 1492, when this area was finally conquered, and the Arabs were out of the country. And little by little, what was happening is that the Christians were advancing in the territory and creating cities. And in those cities, they were planting vines around those cities. And little by little, they were just selecting the sites for planting the vines. The general rule was the rule of the Romans. The Romans then used to forbid planting vines in any soil that could produce other things. The priority was for food. And then for those soils that are not good for cereal, they planted vines. This is a very good thing, but you know that wine ain't more for it. It doesn't aim fertilize for it. And there was also the criteria here. It was in those areas in which they could plant cereal for eating, it was planted. And it was low, the poor soils, the vines were planted. From that moment on, the lake started to travel. Started to travel south, west, north, east. And then later on, you will travel even to the oceans. Okay? We are going to start with a first wine from the cradle of Garnacha, a wine from Carinena. Here we have today three wines from Carinena. From this region, the center, a region that is characterized, Spain is a country of mountains. Most people, we have 80 million tourists a year. But these 80 million people, what they know about Spain are the beaches. But the beaches are not so important for us. The important element for Spain is country. Our country is divided by mountains. Mountains are all the place. Here we have the Pyrenees, that are separating us from the rest of Europe. All of these are mountains. That are separating the Indian Spain, with a lot of rain, from Israeli Spain, in which the mountains they prevent the rain going down. Here in the middle, more mountains. Here we have more mountains. Here we have the highest mountain and a lovely ski station in the very south, so more mountains. All the country mountains. And this is creating many different climates. The Garnacha is born here. Born in an area in which we have the influence of one of the rivers. In Spain we don't have very large rivers. Our rivers, we are very happy with them. We've got to keep the thing that they are lovely, that they are great. That you look at America, you realize how small our rivers are. Nonetheless, they have a certain difference. And here we have the Ebro River that is conducting all the wounds which from the Mediterranean Sea. We have the Mediterranean and the Atlantic Sea. Atlantic Sea means freshness and rain. The Mediterranean Sea means a very long dry season. And this is a fundamental thing for the vine. The vine means a long dry season. The problem you have here in New York State, even in Virginia, is that you don't have a long dry season. You have a lot of water, this is excellent for many other things, but for vine it's a problem because of the water, the water, etc. This is the same problem they have with China. So we are in an area that is influenced by the Mediterranean. It's a warm, dry area. Garnacha couldn't grow here. This is too wet for Garnacha. Remember, Garnacha is always very small water. This is the basis for it. What do we have here? We have very cold winters and very warm, dry summer. Garnacha is growing quietly. But Garnacha cannot give any quality with very high yields. It has been the major limitative factor in the 20th and 20th century for the expansion of Garnacha. It was much more interesting always to plant Syrah, or to plant Cabernet, or to plant Merlot, because you can produce very decent qualities with very high yields with those varieties. With Grenache, you are obliged to be in very low yields. It's only when the culture in Italy is sophisticated enough that the people afford to plant garnacha and to or to recover all garnacha vines to the wines. But they need to deal with very low weeds because of the natural and genetic nature of garnacha. The first wine is coming from the area from Carignan. And here you have Carignana is a very old area. It was already mentioned in the Middle Ages. But Carignana suffered, and in the world of wine, everybody speaks all the time about the terroir and the soil and whatever. And this is important, absolutely important, and everything is about that terroir is always secondary to the first condition for terroir, that is to have a good cluster. So somebody who is paying for the wine. And Garnacha in Aragon was, if you look at the map, was completely isolated. The Spain was a poor country for many years. It was, I don't know when, but then it became a poor country. And the trade routes, they were from here, from Bilbao, from Barcelona, and from the south. And all of this area was abandoned. There was no trade, it was a very poor area. And the grapes, they couldn't be very sold. And the country was selling a lot of wine. Why? Because they had a port. In Barcelona, the wealth of Valencia, the wealth of Catalonia, they were selling a lot of wine. But in this area, there was not any communication. It was the same problem for Rioja. Rioja became Rioja when the train was implemented in Rioja. Before, Rioja has no possibility of having good wines because there was not anybody willing to pay for the wine. And there was no the technology, and this is the first condition for the wine. And in the case of Carignana, it's the same. They have been, for many, many years, just isolated. There were not in any way, any of selling good wines, so they were producing basic wine with very old, for very old wines. It was the new thing, they were keeping stocks of very old wines, and this is an advantage now. Now, the world is finding it richer, the communication is easier, and Carignana wine they can get easily to the US. Very different world, but this is something that is happening for it's very recent. Spain entered into the European Union in 1986, 30 years ago, and the country was modernized less than 25 years ago. Now is the moment that the Spain is ready to do this. And then there is an interactive process in which this terroir is becoming more terroir because you are interested in those wines. And then the producers, they have an incentive in order to research more wines. This is always the case. I don't believe in terroirs that are created by the hand of God and something natural is going like this. I know that many people will tell you that the magic of the limestone or whatever, and everything is so wild. And how fortunate are the people in Bavoli? They were fortunate because they were in Bavoli, and because there were a lot of rich people going to the country and buying the wines. This is the real fortune of the fortune. We have, in this area, in Carignana, it's a relatively large area, not very large compared to other Spanish appellations, but it's an area with a lot of diversity. You have four different types of soils. Today you are going to taste wines from three of those soils. And I hope that you can see the difference. With the same climate, the climate is not going to change, but you have to be aware. Now, for example, you have three types of soils. You are going to see, now, let me see my notes as well, otherwise, you are going to see some of the most important type of soil. There is a fourth type that is an alluvial soil, but the three important types are the limestone soil, clay soils, for example, the clay, and the slate soils. Completely different origins. And they are acting in a completely different way on the vine and on the maturity of the grapes. The first thing you will see a soil with a lot of cobblestone, with a lot of stones, and then the basic, the soil just doing this is limestone. Limestone is the calcare, the French would say the calcare, and they say that you can have good wines only with Calpera. I insist you can have good wines with any type of soil if you have somebody who likes the wine. And then it is true that Calpera is extremely good and gives a particular dimension to Chardonnay in good prices. It is not true that Calpera is going to be good for all kinds of varieties and for all kinds of prices. I come from, my homeland is Canary Islands, and in Canary we have volcanic soils, yes, volcanic and recent volcanic soils, very poor soils, and this is wonderful for the wines, because in this particular climate, it goes very well. And you have other areas that you will see, with the slates, with the basin, with the that are giving also excellent wines. The thing is that we need different wines. You cannot have an excellent Bourbon-Jarra wine if you don't have a limestone soil. But you have in Oregon excellent Pinot Noir from basaltic soils that are also giving a different taste. Okay, this is the characteristic of the limestone, is that this is going to give a lot of richness to the wine. You're going to see wines that are round, wines that are high in the climate are really round and powerful. I think this is the case. Different wine. Just trace that you have enough wine in your glasses. Keep a bit, because I think that the best thing is to go back to the wines and to compare with the others as well. Okay? Then we go to the first moment of transition of Granada is the Arabs come here and the Christians. They start the forward thing, but they are not organized. Each powerful god is creating his own kingdom. And then you have the kingdom of Galicia that goes down to Portugal. Galicia is practically the same name as in Portugal. And this is one way of getting somewhere to Iberia, in the Iberia Peninsula. You have León, it's another kingdom. That many years later was absorbed by Castilla, which is Castilla. Right here. And we have Aragon. Aragon is all of it. And Aragon, this is Aragon, but Aragon was occupying the whole of Catalonia. There was a kingdom, there was some occupation of the land, and Garnacha moved from Aragon to Catalonia. And moved to many areas in Catalonia, but moved to a very particular area. Just imagine, 1973, Spain was a third world country. So much of a third world country that the delegation of the FAO, a United Nations agency for food, they sent some experts to clear up this area here, and they went to an area that was practically abandoned, only two wineries producing rancho wines, and they said, after many analyses, this area has the potential of producing some of the top wines in the world. It was 1973. We have to wait until 1989, when there was a group of five hippies, Alvaro Palacios, René Barbier, that went to Trujillo, and in a very hippie way, they started recovering vineyards and even planting new ones. It was the beginning of Los Erasmus, the Ermita, these kind of ones. In Piorat, they started working around the same, if I said, in an area with a very particular soil. Imagine a kind of an auditorium, like this, looking, facing the sun. With the slate soil. The slate soil is quite, it has a color and is absorbing the heat and freeing the heat in the night. This is creating even more concentration. You want the big Priorat. Priorat owes everything to the US. Because the terroir of Priorat was realized when many American descriptors were enthusiastic about Priorat. Otherwise, it would have been the Licorella would be there, but this is, I always insist this, the clients are always important. And then Priorat started developing those wines that you know, based in Garnacha. Garnacha and Carignan, the two varieties, At the beginning, there were also a planting in Cabernet and Syrah with other fruits. But it has been disappeared. You need to realize that this is not very relevant for the wine. But the wine we are tasting for Teorat is slightly different. And I wanted to show the influence of Teorat, because we will have a wine with Nicorella that later on, which is late. The wine we are tasting is from this area, Teorat, that is an area with clay soils. It's an area that is cold, it's an area that has a higher water retention capacity, and it's an area that is producing very different wines. You're used to those Teorats that are very high alcohol, very powerful, rich, are filling your house, and you feel that something is going on in your body because it's a lot of this like this. But this is a very different style of Teorat. I like it a lot, but this is another style of Teorat. This is a more subtle style of Teorat. This is something that is much more known upon the soil, upon the plate. This is the new development in Teorat. We try to have to understand that these two types of soil are given two types of water. I would have liked to have more Teorat and many more wines, but then you have been here for 3 hours and you have. but I would like you to compare the finesse with this wine. This is a Teorat that is now getting more subtle than other. Recently, I worked for the country in the UK, and we had a taste with Teorat. And when I saw that we had brine, 95 bottles of Teorat, I called my wife to tell her, I will not be brine. But Teorat has become more and more subtle. I think that you see this. You see also that the aromas are familiar, but are different. It's very difficult to identify the mash if you don't know the olive. It's much better to think first about what this wine is telling me, which is the climate is telling me, how the tannins are, which is the acidity, than to think about the grape barrage with the new mash. Because the other thing of the mash is so generous and so humble that the mash very often likes to be a part of a blend. It's helping other varieties. In Rioja, we don't have the Rioja today, but in Rioja, Grenache has been always very important in order to give some aromas and some joy to the wines. This has been always the typical blend, the Grenache from Rioja Baja and Tempranillo and Graciano from Rioja. This is a role of Grenache that is very important. Only in some areas, Grenache alone is being more fashionable. Now it's being more and more fashionable. And this is again thanks for, because of the American and Australian influence. Because you adore having wines with a single great variety. And then the variety of wines are very important. And you are producing better and better wines that are single, wines. This is a good thing. But in Spain, we will be used forward to work with grapes. Because this is another thing of the four countries. When you are four countries, you are not going to receive a lot of money for the wine. You need to work with an insurance policy. The insurance policy, what do you have a structure for? You have an insurance policy. Just to have a blend of varieties. If the year is very cool, you will have early written varieties that will give a decent quality. If the year is very cold, you will have late written varieties that are also giving a decent quality. Often, you need more research, what you find is a compromise. But this is the system we use to blend varieties, we use to blend vintages in order to ensure quality. This is the Soledad system in Peret, but this is also the Reserva Especial de Asturias. It's always a blend of three vintages. We were much more used to blend. But now we are completely influenced by your spirit and your research, so we will have more and more similar varieties. The Scaraday was one of the two wines that were left in the 1970s. Scaraday, Priorat means a priory. The church has always been the most important thing, because the church is the only way that men can think on other things. On things that are more important, because they are only men, they have to look for eternity, they are looking for this, they cannot have a family, so they are concentrated in doing practical things on the land. And it was the way that in France, in Italy, and in Spain, divine advice during the most difficult years, okay? Or within the church. The other important thing of the church that is not so much mentioned is that the church was able to exist because they were serving powerful people. At the time, most of the monasteries, they are so large, those monasteries, not because they are going to have their name in the monks, because those monasteries are open for other people coming there, mostly powerful people. And these powerful people, they needed wine, and they were speaking about the good wines of one place and another. And it was a very important reason for the existence of the region. Orlando is a very typical region that has been ground because of the high-level tourism in the middle. Okay? This is the area of Kerat, as I was telling you, imagine this huge auditorium. This is the part that is not so much exposed to the city of San, because of the here in the forest, but it's more intensive than you see for the lights and light. Okay? And this is a kind of a power. This is something that is mistaken all the feet of the sun and is and this is the area. And here you see this is the slave areas and this is the train area. You have these wires that are more soft or less powerful attracting the people. We go, I take over here, we go from Catalonia, Garnacha, continue to travel, and you have Aragon, but Aragon became very powerful. Aragon was for many, many years, half of Italy was part of the kingdom of Aragon. Indeed, Napoli, Palermo, Sardinia, they have been Spanish for much longer than they have been Italian. Okay? And there was a lot of influence in this. They were Spanish between the 16th century and 1861, and they were Italian from 1861 until now. So and this is one of the things that are in Italy. Italy is not a country. Italy, I adore Italy. Italy is a universe of things because of the history. No? And one of the most important parts of the kingdom of Aragon was called the kingdom of the two Sicilies. And the two Sicilies were Sicily, plus the south of Italy, plus Calabria, Puglia, Campania, Basilicata, and Sardinia. And Sardinia, the grapes that you will find in Sardinia, most of them, they come from Aragon. One of them is the Canonau. Canonau is Grenache. But you will also have in the south, Carignano. Carignano is Carignana, Carignano. And Canonau is all over the island, but basically mostly in the central part of the island, Sardinia. Sardinia is, if you have not been there, you have to go there. But you have to be prepared, because the beauty is a problem. Look at it. It's so beautiful. It has a lot of mountains. It's very wide. The people are very wide. I think they were part of the kingdom of Aragon for many centuries, but they were never real loyal citizens of this. And they're not really very Italian. They have their own culture, their own way of doing things. It's a very particular country. And they have so many mountains. They also have a lot of different climates. In this case, there are many Carignano wines, and I can say that some of the best Carignan in the world, in my view, they come from Sardinia. You can try the Rocca Rubia, the Brunner from Santale, this is a cooperative, and these are great, great wines. But there are many good Carignano in Sardinia. I prefer to have this wine that is giving the most pure expression of a Carignano. It's a wine that has no hope in it. It's a wine that is, they are biodynamic, they forbid tractors, they do all the labor with horses, all of these things, but basically it's not important if you look at it in the wine. But for me, the important thing is to have one point of reference of a very pure, subtle, fruity, Garnacha. And you will see, has a different expression. Still here, you are in the Mediterranean climate. you are in this unique thing that is the Mediterranean. By the way, the Mediterranean, all of us, we are used to see the, as very normal climate. But Mediterranean is a unique climate in the whole planet. Normally, all over the world, the dry season is the cool season. Because it's normal. When you have a very high temperature, there is a lot of evaporation, and you will have more rain. This is the case here. We have a rainy summer. In China, the monsoons are always in the summertime. In all of Asia, and there is something exceptional in the Mediterranean, that the warm season is the dry season. It never dries for many, many months, but this becomes practice in many parts of the world. This together with a warm season and a warm climate. For instance, in California, you have a dry season and a very, very cool season. I've been in California with a very, sweating and thinking of going to the beach, no entering to the beach, you're like this, it's very cool in the Pacific, no? And it's a very cool. Here the Mediterranean is unique in this. Very warm, see? The temperatures are always quite high, very aggressive. Right? And then the mountains will play the role. Here, the winery Oriana is just in the middle of the area. It's among mountains. It's in an area that is quite wide. And it's an area that is developing little by little. Okay? It has a lot of paragon influence. These plots of Canada are practically are similar to Garnacha. There is always, you know, that in the natives you have the species, the variety, the flow, and the biotype. The biotype is a flow, is somebody, our sister has a different clone than me. But if there was a repetition of me and I was living in other climate before the feminine, I would be a different person. This is a biotype. Right? And the canon law is a biotype of organization. It's not a clone.
Did you know that Dracena Wines now has a wine club? We named it the Chalk Club. Draco is on our label, but Vegas was getting a little jealous, so we decided he deserved to be our club spokesdog. In Las Vegas, betting chalk means that you are betting on all of the favorites. We are betting that we are one of your favorite wineries, so we thought the name was apropos. The club is simple, yet a bit different than most. When you wager on us, we will ship you 3 bottles of wine twice a year, once in April and once in September. You can choose all red or mix of red and rosé. You immediately receive 15% off of all your wine purchases throughout the year, but what makes our club stand out is the progressive discount. Let your club membership ride into the next year. Your discount increases. Each year you parlay your membership, you receive an additional 5% off up to a planned maximum of 25%. Your club shipments are discounted to a flat $15, plus we'll cover your club shipping cost for your second shipment. That's $15 house money in a sure bet for you. So please head to our website, DracenaWines.com, and find out all of the benefits of joining the Chalk Club and how to sign up. We've stacked the odds so that you can get our award-winning wines without breaking the bank.
Here, you see, they're trying hard in Sardinia because we had the same problem in Aragon. For many, many years, Sardinia was extremely poor out of the market. They could keep the landscape, they could keep the nurture, and now they have something extremely good to offer, a few varieties of wines and food. If you want to know what a lobster is, and you have the money to pay for it because it's very expensive, go to Sardinia. Okay? But only the Berlusconi is eating this thing. But it's really a long line for you. And they're trying many things, they're trying to recover the terracotta works. I'm really convinced that one of the things we have to learn with Garnacha is to use this oil. I think that all these very good varieties, that red varieties, that are tannic, that they have a power, when you are looking for finesse, just working scientifically with terracotta, with pilajas, is important. What is not important, I think, is to work in a very romantic way, no? I like amphora because amphora is romantic and it's natural and it's old and things like this. No, because amphora, they have problems of permeability, of shape, etc. But to understand how amphora works, the permeability of the oxygen, the shape of amphora is extremely important for the connection of the leaf and things like this. I think that amphora is a way of working. And they are working with these things, they are trying to predict the oak for the white. This is the things this is the one of the parts for the vineyard. Then you go to the parts of the islands and they are extremely floating and stuff. And then we continue the trip. We were coming east, now we stop, we go west. And we go for the expressions of cool or cooler climate Karnataka. We go for one of the areas that is at the limit of the cultivation of Karnataka. Karnataka cannot grow from here, not from here. Karnataka cannot grow because of the water, because of the rain, in this area. So the way that Karnataka is moving is only here. Here is 2.4 for Karnataka. South, only until here. And here, the very high altitude people, 1,000 meters, you will not find a lot of Karnataka here, and you will find it is not very interesting, unless there are, for instance, here, in some very high altitude. So Karnataka is trying to expand all over the place. The reasons are not quality reasons, it's because it's a very starky, great variety. So everybody has an interest to plant Karnataka. But in many places, here, there is no Karnataka. Karnataka is here in Catalonia, here to the north, then go south to Madrid, and practically to the next. Okay? Simply because it cannot grow there, it cannot reach it to there. And here we go to Navarra. Navarra is one of the richest regions in Spain. And this can be considered as a very good thing, I think indeed it's a very good thing, but as a problem. In those regions that are poor, governments are not very active, people are trying to look for their own things, there is not a lot of investment capacity, so you keep your own wines and you keep your own document variety. When you have a rich government and people who don't lead to the world and you are thinking in business terms, you go for business. And what you do? You grab up your very old Garnacha vines, and you plant Cabernet Sauvignon, Merlot, Syrah, because they sell a lot. And this has been the drama of Navarra. You will find many ones from Navarra that are Cabernet Sauvignon, Syrah. And then when you go to the region, you will see that in some of the hills, there are abandoned terraces of very old Grenache vines that were grabbed up. Some people, very young people, like the people of Vina Central, what they've been doing is trying to rescue some of the rough old villas, old Grenache villas in Navarra. In the past, Grenache was, and it's still now, I think it's something very important for Grenache, was used for making rosé wines. The good thing about rosé wines in Grenache is that you don't have to wait for the whole season, you can harvest earlier, and you still have all the flora around us and some complexity. And some rosé wines in Grenache are wonderful, are really very good. But rosé didn't sell very well. Now, again, thanks to the US that you are drinking millions of liters of rosé, rosé is becoming very popular, and they are thinking about it. But for red wines, Grenache was always badly considered. I did my enology degree in 1986. I couldn't say that because you will realize how old I am, but I said this. In 1986, it's many years ago, but not so many, the official way of learning was In Spain, we have a problem because we don't have grape varieties that have a very high quality. For instance, our Grenache, that is in many parts of the country, is very oxidative. The only thing that was oxidative were the guys who were making the Grenache. The other thing is that we didn't have the technique and things like this. And the solution was, that look at the French, they are so rich, everybody likes French, let's plant French varieties. It was one of the big things, our inferiority complex with the French, we only have inferiority complex with the French on this thing, trying to mitigate it. Now this is being recovered. We are more self-confident. We are more trying to do our things. But for many years, we failed this. And in those areas that were well organized, that were richer, the problem was even bigger, because they grab many more hectares of land to plant this. But now some young people, at least people of the Indian society, is trying to recover those things. Those vineyards were practically abandoned. This is giving yields of less than 2,000 kilos per hectare. This is giving very tiny bunches, and it's difficult to work with this. You cannot mechanize this. This is terrible, but this is beauty. I don't even speak about the wine, I speak of the beauty of the landscape. One of the dramas in the country is that all the rural areas have been abandoned. The people is living like in New York, in the cities, and then you have huge areas with nobody, because these kinds of things they were not there. And this is what they are doing with the National South, recovering these very old grapes, and this at this climate that is cooler than Carignan. And I think you will find this in your glass. You will find a wine that is higher in acidity, and you find much softer tannins. You find particularly no tannins, and there are wines that can go to drink. This is just at the limit of the distribution. It's very old wines. And we do need the intervention. Of course, they are organic, respecting the whole thing, most of the wines. This is one of the requirements for this kind of wines, no? To be respectful for the environment, to give some importance. I come to this area because I'm like this, I've been told to go. And then we go. I was telling you the routes, the Garnacha routes. We were going east, Catalonia, Sardinia, we are going west, Navarra, Rioja, and now we go north. But we cannot go north close to the Atlantic Ocean. There's a lot of rain there. Garnacha will be rotting every year. Garnacha cannot grow in Bordeaux. Far too much rain. Then in order to go north, you need to go through the warmer and drier area of France, through the eastern side of France, the land of the Roussillon, where there is a lot of Garnacha, and extremely good, Languedoc, Rhone, and then you try to go as north as possible until there is one moment that you can go, because Garnacha or Grenache is not ripening. The limit from Grenache in the north is the area to which the Grenache lovers owe so much. It was the only area where the people there, they had the self-confidence to keep it, that was keeping Grenache as a top quality variety. And speaking about Chateauneuf-du-Pape, Grenache came from Aragon to France, and it was reaching north until Chateauneuf-du-Pape, slightly north of Chateauneuf-du-Pape, in Bourgass, there is the Grenache. Farther north, there is no Grenache. You will have Syrah, Saint Joseph, Hermitage, Côte Maudite. This is Syrah and no Grenache, simply because Grenache cannot ripen there. And for many years, Chateauneuf-du-Pape was the only region with top quality Grenache for almost 100 years. And it was thanks to the church. Chateauneuf-du-Pape is the new castle of the Pope. And the Pope, for some years, for those kings of the church, they decided to move from Roma to Avignon, to the center of this area. I don't know if you've been in Avignon, there is a huge castle there for the Pope, there are many things on this. And the Pope was very important for wine, because what the popes liked as the kings, it was just the kind of the fashion, they were the prescriptors of the time. In this. And the Pope, they were living there for many years. They also are responsible for the importance of Burgundy, because they were buying a lot of wine from Burgundy, but they were keeping this area of Chateau Vita. You see here, this is Chateau Vita. Here, this is already the area. This is already the area of Saint Joseph, Trinitas, Torboti. There is no more than that here. The limit is here. But only here and here. This area, is, there is no Grenache. The conditions are, so it's very specific to this area. Why is that? Because in Châteauneuf, you have, it's practically a plain, very much exposed to the sun. The climate is quite dry. The soils, there is not only the Galère Boulet, there are other types of soils. The soils are quite warm, and Grenache can ripen there. But in Châteauneuf, the pub, my, it was 15 minutes. I speak a lot. I'm having a receipt. I go more quickly. In Châteauneuf du Pape, the Grenache is very rarely to be found alone. It's always in a blend. Châteauneuf du Pape is famous because of the blends of the 13 different varieties. Château de Beaucastel, each year they produce, maybe for aesthetics, they produce, the Château de Beaucastel is a blend of the 13 different varieties. I was one in a tasting organized by the family Ferrand, the owners of Château Beaucastel, for each of the different grape varieties. And it was amazing, because there you realize, for instance, Syrah in this place is not giving top quality. Grenache is giving top quality, and Mourvèdre is the magnificent. And it was the area in which Grenache could be kept, but always upon the condition to keep it blended. Ciao, Steve. Always upon this condition. There is only one outlet, one very important property, winery in Chateau du Pape that is making a single variety Grenache. That is the greatest one, Chateau Rayas. Chateau Rayas is a 100% Grenache one. But this is really exceptional. And it's because they have a very, very particular, very warm terroir for this. Otherwise, it wouldn't rip. Then the other thing important with Chateau du Pape, it was the style. They are not afraid at all of aging the wines in old. They are having a very particular style in which you have this slight oxidative notes that they are old, that are giving complexity, and are giving also some strength to the wine for lasting many, many, many years. I go quickly, because I've been speaking far too much, and then I go for the trip of the trip to Australia. In 1833, I think, or 25, James Busby, an Australian, a person from New South Wales, he received a grant to organize a trip in Europe in order to explore the possibilities for Australia to become a fine wine producing country. And he started his trip in Jerez, the Sherry area, then he moved to Malaga. From Malaga, he took a ship to Catalonia, to Barcelona, and then he moved north up to Champagne. In Catalonia, he took some canes of Grenache. And those canes of Grenache, they did the whole travel half the world in order to reach Australia. For many years, Grenache was very important in Australia. It was for the years in which the production was small and they were looking for different solutions, but both in Victoria and South Australia, Grenache was very important. The problem with Grenache in Australia was that for many years, the most important wine there was the Tone, or the fortified wines, fortified wines with a lot of color and with a lot of power, with a lot of sugar and with a lot of alcohol. We have to know that Australia first was a country of men that were miners, that were having hard professions, and they used to drink a lot, and it was the wine they did like. And Grenache, you can see it in the glasses, never gives a lot of color. It's giving a lot of fruit, but it's not particularly suited for fortified wines. It's much better as a still wine. So Grenache was little by little replaced, first by Syrah, then by Cabernet, another variety. But in some areas, there were some abandoned vineyards that were rescued, and most of it was in the most Mediterranean of the Australian climate, that is in McLaren Bay, south of Adelaide, at a climate that is warm, that is dry. If you go to this area, Langon Creek is much more humid than McLaren Bay. And there were people like Chester Osborne, from Dannenberg, who were rescuing many old villages for this. Chester is a personality. They are great in what they are doing, presenting so many different wines in Australia with so much personality, in having this particular style of winemaking, always with full trodden grapes and basket press. And they rescued some of the very old Garnacha wines. Nonetheless, for me it would be difficult for this wine to spot it as European. I think it has definitely an Australian character. It has a different warmth on it. It has a different expression on this. And I think this is something that is more related to this chameleonic character of Renato, that is adapted to the different climate. I don't comment the wines, but if you want any comment on the wines, you tell me. Eh? But I always, as I said before, I trust that you are better tasters than me, or in any case, you have a long taste, and you will find all the fruits and all the tannins and all the acidity and all the length and all the texture that you want to find on this. But any comments, please, just tell me. Yeah? On this. But in this, I don't like very often that people is telling me how I want to taste. Because I don't like to continue this for others, no? Mm-hmm. This is Dannenberg. This is the father, the son. They are crazy people that are doing something lovely. I admire them a lot. And look at the vines. They are extremely old vines that are keeping there. Of course, they are vines that are planted from their own roots. Eh? They are not attacked by Phylloxera. You know that in South Australia, they are just battling against Phylloxera, and they are resisting Phylloxera. Phylloxera is already in Victoria, but not yet in South Australia. But one day it will arrive. Then we go to your country, to the US and to California. And very briefly, in California, you know, California was Spanish for some time. Then it was Mexican, and then it was in the US. And the Spaniards, they brought to California one great variety, the Mission. The Mission is the same than Criolla in Argentina, País in Chile, Listán Preto in the Canary Islands in my homeland. The Mission only now, in California people is starting to think, hey, can we get good quality out of this? But it's true that the Mission was brought to California in order to produce a lot of wine in very short time. And the Spaniards, they left before that. The Spanish kingdom was not very keen on supporting development of vineyards in America, because it was a very good business for continental Spain to sell the grapes in America. In Mexico, for instance, they had a big drama. At one moment in 1595, there were 70,000 hectares of vines in El Bajío, in central Mexico. And Philip II ordered to grab all of this up in order to favor the... So you can imagine there was not a lot of incentive even in California for this. Grenache arrived to California much, much later, several centuries later. And arrived to California at the same time that Cabernet, Merlot, other varieties. Because of that, it's taking a long time for California to take on Grenache. But for me, looking at California, the problems that are in California with the lack of water, the problems that are with climate change, with climate warming, I'm really surprised that Grenache is not expanding more. Because with Grenache, you can save a lot of water, you can have a particular style, you can play with a lot of innovation, and I think that this is a very much of a future for this country. You have this sort of particular climate, no? In which the influence of this very cool ocean is so important at this low latitude, that is a very interesting experience for us. I didn't know this wine before this tasting. I've been tasting it before this morning. I like it a lot. I find a different expression. I like all the floral aromas. I would need to understand it more, honestly. Yeah? But I like it a lot. I like that it's a very different expression of Grenache from still speaking about a different origin of and I like all the history behind this wine, eh? All the history of the feminism of the my darling Clementine. Yes.
This is a wonderful presentation. As a master wine, you taste this wine, you might be confused with something wrong.
Yes, this is a very good point. You may have a confusion with Pinot Noir in some cases, in the most subtle cases, and mostly in countries that are more free, more self-confident. This is the case of California. Because in Spain, we still don't have self-confidence. So we look for color, concentration, all. And then it's a different thing. But when you are not looking for that, when you are looking just for the purest expression of wine, it's true that Grenache can approach very much the Pinot Noir, mostly from the New World. And it's true that you can have some confusion on this. I think the aromatics are still different, no? Pinot Noir is more on the cherry, here is more on all the red berries, but it's true that there is an element. And there is a second element on this, is the freshness and the very soft tannins. Okay? This is, for instance, the top Burgundy, there the Pinot Noir has a lot of tannins. There are wines that are really tannic. But most of the Pinot Noir that is now appreciated all over the world are wines that are also more delicate. I thank you very much. Then we go to the other trip to the east. We were going to Australia, California, and now we go to Israel. And Israel, the history of Egypt, the Bible, the Jews were expelled from Egypt or escaped from Egypt, and one of the reasons was that Egypt was buying a lot of wine. And most of the wine was coming from Palestine, from this area. And then, for many years, you know the story, who's going to repeat this, but Israel was in the situation it was, until one person, Rothschild, he decided to, in the 19th century, to start helping his from Israel by planting some grape varieties from the Europe. They were planted mostly in the area of Acre and in the area north of Haifa, but then little by little they were entering Galilee. And they were trying to recover the idea of the old wines from Israel. They were not the old wines from Israel, the Grenache comes from the other area. There are a very small production of very autochthonous wines that have been found, I don't know where, and this is a very interesting thing. But Grenache is very well suited to Israel climate. Israel climate is Mediterranean, is so a long, dry, warm summer. It's hotter than Spain and than Aragon, but the Israelis, they have the best technology on earth for dealing with water, and they are extremely good as well with canopy management. And they are doing things that are really great for this. I think this is a good experiment, it's in Galilee, a good experiment of dealing with this variety, with Grenache, that I think is Mediterranean, is adapted to the climate. But this is a very recent trip. This is a trip only of the 19th century. Even Israel, everybody thinks about thousands of years. In this case, it's very modern. I'm going quick because I know that I'm out of time, and I've been promised to be killed if I'm late. No problem. And I go back to finish to the Craddock. We've been traveling, there are many other areas. I haven't included Rioja or Montsant or Empordà or Roussillon, many other areas with Grenache, but that's just to give you an idea how it's moving. Then I go back and I try to demonstrate how Grenache is really chameleonic. It's having different expressions according to the country, to the terroir, to the people. And now I go back to Aragon, to Carignana, to the Prado, and we go to a very particular type of Grenache. It's in the same area of the first wine in Carignana, but here the vines are planted in the slate soils. And I think you will see very quickly the difference. You will see the slate soils are darker, are taking more heat. The wines are higher in alcohol. The wines are really powerful. The wines are really a concentration. And this is the soil. With the same climate, very old wines all the time, very sparse wines, you see the density. The reason for this low density is because there is no water. And each of these small plants is exploring a huge area of soil behind them. So they are not so small. Never underestimate the capacity of those plants to grow. And here I think that you can see the influence of this soil, of this Grenache soil, to give this power. And now compare this with the last wine, with the wine that is pure Aragon made by a Chilean, by Marcelo, a great winemaker, somebody who is always open to research, somebody who was really needed in Aragon in order to give innovation. And he's looking for finesse, for the balance in those wines. You will see, this is a wine that is coming from the limestone area, from an area that is fresher. It's very old wines, but there he's looking with much more self-confidence for the very expression of the wine. He's not trying to impress you. He's not trying to look for concentration. He's not looking for a lot of color. He's not looking for a lot of anything. He's looking for the essence of the wine. And this is the limestone from Carignano. How late I am for giving some conclusions? 5 minutes late. Okay. So, I hope you enjoy. I would recommend you to retaste some of the wines. At least in my case, I always learn about wine tasting by retasting. I never have, even when I have a very long tasting in front of me, I need to have a point of reference. And I need to go back to some wines to fix my caliber, right, for the wine. And this is good too, because you can create a mind map of the different expressions of Grenache. My conclusion is, Grenache has a contribution to make to the present world. We are exposed to climate change. We are having all over the world huge problems with drought, with soils that are already polluted, with the need to go for more reasonable yields. The people is a little bit tired of very oaky, very powerful wines. They are looking more for delicacy. We have all the things, all the policy of the anti-alcohol movements that are quite right, alcohol is not good, and that are recommending always wine with moderation, try to bring for things that are more balanced, try to look for the delicacy of food. We also need to speak about wines with a different vocabulary. We don't need to impress anybody with wine, we need to share wines. And we need to think that there are many people that would enjoy more a delicate wine, and they don't have to feel that the wine is better because it's more concentrated. All of these things, they can be offered by Grenache. Grenache is also a good blend. I'm thinking that because of the climate emergency, we need also to create our own insurance policies in this. We need also to think how the new maps of the world with the vines are made. And Grenache can offer many things because it has nice aromatic definition. You can have very good qualities. You can have different expressions. And it can blend very well with many other varieties. I think this is something that is very interesting to try. Always upon the basis, low yields, poor soils, little water, and a lot of love for the land is also important. I hope that you have enjoyed. Sorry if I spoke far too much, but this is my problem. Thank you very much.